So now we're going with the top five here. Number five, glow-in-the-dark sunglasses. For all of you who like to wear your sunglasses at night. Number four, a camcorder with braille-encoded buttons. It's like asking the colorblind person to paint your house. Number three, the parachute that opens automatically. Okay, that's pretty good until we get on impact. I guess that's so they can... Where did it go? Oh, there it is. Number two, self-help book on how to read. Just me. Go. And then the number one top useless invention, an ejection seat for a helicopter. Now, as we look at these things, we can kind of say that a lot of the inventions that we have, obviously many inventions in our time, make life easier. We enjoy them. We want them. This morning, we're going to talk about what prize will you choose? When I started thinking about a sermon idea, I kind of had an idea that Sarah had been talking to me about, and so I told Dave that this was probably going to be one of my shorter sermons, which probably means it's going to end on time, which is good for most of you. But this idea of prize, this idea of what's our goal in life, what prize will we choose? And I'm going to start kind of in a different area with this. We're going to start in Hebrews chapter 12. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. So we had this idea of the cloud of witnesses. And if you remember in chapter 11, beforehand, he goes into some of our great cloud of witnesses, these champions of the faith, if you will. But this morning, I want to talk about something that's probably a little bit more personal for me, and that's my examples. Now, let me go ahead and say this beforehand. I am a sensitive human being. I'm the type of person who, when Sarah watches a show that has something, the catharsis moment, the moment where you're just like, oh, that is so, I don't like that. I don't like sitting down to the movie and watching this whole time go through, and then the main character die that you've built all of it up to, and everybody's sitting around going, what? I don't want to pay to see that. It's like Sarah showed me this movie one time about how this man and wife are just find out that they're going to have a baby. And then he finds out that he's got cancer and he's only got a few months to live. So the whole idea of the movie is this man filming a video so his child's going to know who... What? I don't want to... So I'm just going to tell you as I talk about my examples, hopefully I don't get emotional. But if I do, just pause with me. I'll get over it because I do normally, but... It's more annoying to me that I can't talk when I get that way because it's just that way. So I'm going to start talking about my examples. So I'll start off with one that's going to be difficult for me. And that's my grandmother, Dorothy Cole. My grandmother was a champion of the faith for me. One big reason why is because there was never a moment when I was little that I didn't know who she was. Now, there are some great stories about my grandmother. And one of my favorite towards the end was the fact that Sarah's mom's church in New York, the Wetzel Road congregation, when my grandmother was really sick and she, you know, from about February to May when she fell and broke her knee until the end, we were asking for a lot of prayers. So Sarah called her mom and said, can you have your church pray for her? Well, many of you know my grandmother's name that we called her was Big Mama. Her mom was Little Mama. Then you have Big Mama. My mom's not Mini Mama, but we had Big Mama. Her church loved praying for my grandmother because they loved being like, tonight we're going to be praying for Big Mama. They were like, all right, it's just a name that a lot of people, most people would not pick that for themselves. But she loved that name. One of again, towards, you know, the last 3 or 4 years of her life, one of the things that was so special for me from her was the fact that she doted so much on my wife. My grandmother was always my biggest fan. In fact, when I would preach, she would be so proud. And that was, you know, from the time when I was 14, 15, and I was speaking until the last one that she heard, she was so proud. And I knew no matter what happened, she's just going to be sitting there with the biggest smile on her face. So when Sarah and I got married, and I saw just how much she loved her, and then, and this is going to be a little harder for me, towards the end, my grandmother was very sick. She was at Sumner Regional Medical Center. She didn't really know who she was all the time. My wife was working on her master's degree, and so she was working as a teacher assistant at our school. And I really didn't know what was going on because I'm teaching during the day and things like that. Well, one of her assistants came to me and said, "I just wanted to let you know that Sarah's not here." And then I said, "Okay, thank you." And I just moved on with my day. I didn't stop to ask anymore. I guess I should have said, "Well, is she okay?" But I just figured if something was really wrong, they would have told me. What I found out later was that my mom had called me because my grandmother had had a moment where she knew who she was. It was Monday. She passed away on Wednesday. And she said, "I want to see Sarah." So my mom called and said, "Can you get here?" And so my wife left. She went to the hospital and she held her hand and she talked to her. And that's a truly special moment for me. I didn't get to spend that moment with them. By the time I got to the hospital, she was back out. She didn't know who she was. But that moment of knowing that the person who is my hero, my partner in life, oh, man, it was just one of those moments. And it was at the end, and it was another lesson for me. Because through that, I got to see how much my wife loved me, how much my grandmother loved her, and it was all about love. She taught me love. And that's where she's a champion for me. My next one that I want to bring up is someone that many people know, and that's Bill Johnson. Now, I know a lot of you may not have had a chance to come across Bill in your life. I didn't meet Bill until my first mission trip. We were in South Carolina. And that was the first time that I got to meet quite the character. Bill was a character. I remember I wasn't with them on this, but I do recall, I think Brandon and Bill ran across a snake on one of their door knocking trips. And before Brandon could turn to run, Bill was already in the van. But Bill was just one of those kinds of people who others were drawn to him. I'll never forget, he was telling me a story about being in Scotland and how he was walking up the hill and, you know, of course, in Scotland, they're wearing the kilts. And he said, "We get to the top of the hill, and there are these Scottish guards guarding a castle or something. And a big gust of wind blew, and the kilt goes up." And he said, you know, just his expression, these guys that are supposed to be stone-faced, they just started laughing. And after that, he carried on about a 30-minute conversation with them. That's just Bill. The other thing about Bill was he didn't mind kicking you out of your comfort zone. Dave knows this more than I do. About the only time that I ever really experienced this is I was working as an intern one summer, and I was with Bill. And he took me somewhere because he was going to meet and have a Bible study with someone. He said, "I want you to be here. You know, it would be a good experience for you." What he didn't tell me was, "I want you to be here. You're going to be the one doing it. I'm just going to sit back and watch you," which was not what I was planning. So they asked a question. And they asked about the resurrection of Christ. And they ask, you know, and it's just this very detailed question, and I'm just kind of glancing the surface of it because I'm going, where is Bill going to go with this? And he just goes, he said, "Brother, what do you think?" And then he just sat there, and I was like, I don't think. I try hard not to. And I guess I should have been prepared because Dave told me one time, and I would assume mine was, well, I don't know which would be worse. But Dave told me one time he was in Romania with Bill. Is it Romania? And Dave was sitting down in the front row, and Bill gets up, Got a special treat this morning from the Rivergate Church in Madison, Tennessee. David Sinn is going to be our speaker this morning. He just sat down. Never told Dave that he was going to speak. Just threw him up there. But he threw you out of your comfort zone. And that's how you grow. Now, for Bill, one of the things that I remember about the end of his life as well is, man, cancer was tearing him up. And his only concern was, I have so much to teach. And I remember going with Dave and Brandon, and we'd go to his house, and there he was in his hospital bed recording tapes so people could hear him speak. It was, a month and a half or so before he passed away with cancer. They take him in his hospital bed into the church and sit him up front because he has something to say. Till his final breath, he was teaching. And the amazing thing about it is, through the ones that he touched, he's still teaching. The final person that I'm going to talk about this morning, and again, this isn't an all-inclusive list. I have so many witnesses, but this is someone that is going to touch a lot of people in here. And that's Mike Judge, the old man. Mr. Judge just, so many different things to me. I started off, Sean and I met, I think Sean was in 7th grade, which that would have put me in 6th grade. And he was kind of more of the authority figure at that time, which is sometimes hard to look at Mr. Judge as an authority figure because he'll yell at you and then he'll laugh at you 2 seconds afterwards. You're like, I don't know how to react. You didn't know if he was mad at you or not. But as I grew older and going through high school, and of course he was our captain of our wonderful mission trips where the bus may break down somewhere, or even worse, we'll be driving down the road and, you know, he figures out, well, let's see, the faster we get, this was a van, by the way, a church van, a Smurf van. The only way the headlights and the windshield wipers work is if the gas is pressed all the way down. As you let up, you watch the windshield wipers go, and it gets really, and of course it's pouring down rain, so we had to, down the road. It was right up his alley, anyways. But so we would be on mission trips. One of the greatest things of mission trips, I was lucky enough to be one of the older ones when we started going. Brandon finally joined our ranks later on. And I think he will agree with this. One of the things that you knew, if you stayed with Mr. Judge on a mission trip, you knew what was going to happen, is every night you were going to have double stuffed Oreos and chocolate milk. No matter how hot it was, you'd be door knocking for up. And Bowling Green, Ohio, 8 hours a day, 106 degrees outside, you're going home to chocolate milk and Oreos. It kind of made everything all better. Around my junior year or so, we started doing the youth rallies. And Dave would send groups of us out to other churches for us to sit down and talk to them about our youth rallies. Well, every year, I got paired up with my teenage partner, Mike Judge. It was the teen class that would go. Mr. Judge and I went to I don't know how many churches together. And I don't know how it happened. But every time, I will never forget, we were at Gulletsville. But it was one of 3 times that this happened. We sit down in class, and the teacher gets up front and he goes, okay, tonight we're going to continue our discussion on women's role in the church. And I go, oh boy. And then I look over next to me and Mr. Judge already has his smirk on his face. So the class would start. About 2 minutes into class, he would raise his hand. And he would go into his Mike Judge diatribe on women and just start throwing scriptures out. And then I would look over, and the girls in the classroom were, I mean, flames were shooting out of their eyes. And the teacher was like, I don't know. And then Mr. Judge would just put his hand down, and his laugh would just keep going. As I got older, Mr. Judge was one of those kind of people who never taught me, it never treated me as a kid. You know, as I got older, and I remember going on mission trips my senior year and then as an intern, it was never that I was a kid. He always talked to me like I was an equal. He put confidence in me that I could do things that maybe I was nervous about. And not only the confidence, he expected that of me. Which, as I got older, that made it easier for me to talk to him about stuff. One of the things that I will never forget, too, and this was, again, something that made my wife even closer to me, is I'll never forget, I was sitting 7 rows back on that side. On the very end seat, on the morning that Mr. Judge got up there. And as Mr. Judge goes up to talk, I already got up awake. This is going to be good. You know, so I was already in that mindset. When he announced that he had cancer and that he didn't have very much longer, I remember going, okay, let me find my happy place. Let me stare off somewhere else. But I don't want to think about this right now because I'll get upset. I don't want to get upset in front of everybody else. And so I just went to my own little world because I knew it would be too much for me to handle. When all of a sudden an arm comes around me, I look over and Sarah is bawling. And I'm like, stop. You can't do that. You know, that's not something I can handle right now. And that's when she said, I don't know how you're going to get, I don't know how you can handle this information right now. This is your best friend's dad. He's so much more than that. And so she starts telling me all this. I'm like, I know all this. That's why I'm trying not to think about it, woman. You know, why are you doing this to me? You know, it's like she wanted to see it. She's like, go, go, until it finally goes. And of course, it didn't help that at that point I look up and Chris Hayes is right in front of me and he's turned. He's got, like, great, here we go. But it was one of the most incredible teaching moments of my life. Because Mr. Judge had always been that person while we'd been on mission trip. Oh, don't get your Mickeys all up in the. Hide those Mickeys, you know. We don't need any of those feelings. Stay away. At that moment was him teaching us that it's okay. He wasn't scared of what was going to come, but it was okay for us to be emotional. It was okay for us to have those feelings. These people taught me a lot. These people taught me, they were my champions of the faith. They were people that have helped me get to where I am now, and hopefully as I get stronger. But it leads me to where the short part of the sermon that I want to go into. About 1700 years ago, Augustine of Hippo gave a sermon titled A Test of Love. Now, he's a very respected member of the church at that time. He has a lot of writing still. People still read his words. But people were used to him getting up and giving just a wow. Kind of want to make sure no one's sitting in the window type of thing, too, because it's going to be a while. But he got up, and probably one of his shortest sermons is quite possibly one of his more powerful ones. And he said, suppose God proposed to you a deal and said, I will give you anything you want. You can possess the whole world. Nothing will be impossible for you. Nothing will be a sin. Nothing forbidden. You will never die, never have pain, never have anything you do not want, and always have everything you do want. Except for just one thing. You will never see my face. Now, he closed it with a question. Did a chill just rise in your hearts when you heard the words, you will never see my face? That chill is the most precious thing in you. That is the pure love of God. You see, so many of these things, the world tells you can have now. You can have everything you want. It's not a sin to do that. God would want you to be happy. Who cares what other people are going to think about you? Do what makes you happy. And lots of people do. But the payoff is we will never see His face. We will never commune with Him in heaven. We won't have that reward that we should be striving for. As it says, Psalm 105, "Oh, give thanks to the Lord. Call upon His name. Make known His deeds among the peoples. Sing to Him. Sing praises to Him. Tell all of all His wondrous works. Glory in His holy name. Let the hearts of those who seek the Lord rejoice. Seek the Lord and His strength. Seek His presence continually." We're surrounded by witnesses, both of light and darkness. I shared with you for a few minutes this morning some of my witnesses of light. Some of the people who have battled in this earth, and they weren't perfect. But they showed me how to walk. Who are the witnesses you're surrounding yourself with? Are they witnesses shining with you in the light? Were they witnesses trying to put you in darkness? What is your treasure? Are your treasures more the riches of this world? Is that what makes you happy? Is that what you are seeking in every aspect of your life? Are these your priorities? Or are your priorities getting to the point where you can see the face of God? Where you can sit in heaven and you can sing praises to Him and you can worship Him and be in His presence forever. Finally, as a witness, because we're all witnesses, what is your testimony? How are you living your life? In what way are you witnessing to this world? This life's not easy. There's pain in this world. There's heartache in this world. The witnesses that I spoke to of earlier, my grandmother was ready. The other two, they weren't ready. They still wanted to be here to witness. But this world took them early. All of you probably lost someone early. Are you seeking the treasure of heaven? Have you made that decision in your life? Is it something where you've read and you understand that there's more to this life than just living and someone burying you in a grave and that's it? Have you read that? Do you believe it? Do you believe that there was that we have a God that loves us so much that He understood that we can't be perfect? But because of that, He made a plan. Because He knew that we were going to be separated from Him. Do you believe that plan? Do you understand that you've been separated by Him, from Him by sin? And that the only way to commune with Him again is to repent of those sins, confess His name, and be buried with Him in baptism. You've done those things, yet realize that maybe you haven't been striving to see the face of God. We have this time set aside now that if you need anything in any way, that you can come as we stand and as we sing.
789.
Father,
take my life,
closer.